This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a closer look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the nation. Today On Deadline is looking back at the last 4 years and the legacy left by our 46th president, Joseph Biden. Throughout his time at the reins of the country, the former president oversaw positive and negative events, both domestically and abroad. These include the end of the COVID-19 pandemic, the inflation crisis, war in the Middle East, war in Ukraine, the end to the war in Afghanistan, the withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan, fighting for women's reproductive rights, the forgiveness of student debt, controversial pardons, and of course, we can't forget that he dropped out of the 2024 election in the 11th hour. So it seems pretty clear that Biden's legacy won't soon be forgotten, although it's up to history to decide how he's rated among the rest of America's presidents. One thing's for sure, Biden has been around Washington longer than anyone else who ever served in the Oval Office. His career spans more than 50 years. It began in 1973 when he was a senator for his home state of Delaware. Then, after serving in that role for nearly 4 decades, Biden was chosen by then-Senator Barack Obama to become his running mate. And on that ticket, the pair eventually won 2 terms in the White House. After Obama's run in the White House, a familiar name won an election against Hillary Clinton, the Democratic candidate. We're talking about President Donald Trump. Now, during that first Trump term, Biden's name was called once again, and he won his party's nomination to be a candidate for the White House. So that's how Joe Biden likely wrapped up his long-spanning political career at the age of 82 with the title of president. In his final week at the helm, Biden addressed the nation, leaving Americans with several parting thoughts about what the future should and could hold. To share more, David Greenberg, an associate professor of history, journalism, and media studies at Rutgers University, joined Odyssey.
You know, remind us of the importance of the presidential farewell address. We had to go back in history to kind of remember who did what. I mean, it seems like a way in part to do something a president would normally enjoy in, say, a State of the Union speech.
Well, they've had different purposes. You know, George Washington started the tradition, and his is one of the most famous ones. He was the first president, of course, and at that time it wasn't clear how long this new republic would last. And so his was kind of a warning of sorts to hold the republic together, to avoid partisanship, to avoid foreign entanglements, and to, for Americans sort of to keep their eyes on the course that had led them through the Revolution and the founding. And then they've sort of come and gone over the years. Certainly not every president has delivered one. They've gotten more common, I think, in our own time in the television age. Probably the most famous one of more recent times, if we can call the 1950s or early 1960 recent, is Dwight Eisenhower, where he gave his rather rather demagogic warning against the so-called military-industrial complex, kind of falsely suggesting that that's what causes wars rather than the other way around. But it's one tradition.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about a warning, because we were told by the president's spokeswoman before the speech that he was going to just talk about his accomplishments and that the speech would not be political. But he got a number of warnings in, warning of the dangerous concentration of power taking shape. An oligarchy is forming. He didn't mention any people by name, but it was not a warm and fuzzy speech.
No. I mean, it was certainly a combative one. And, you know, when he's talking about oligarchs, you have to think he's thinking of the well-heeled funders of the Republican Party and Donald Trump's campaign, people like Elon Musk, who've gotten very close to the incoming president. But, of course, there are wealthy donors, perhaps not quite to the same extent, on the Democratic side. And it's a bit peculiar for the sitting president to talk about oligarchs. I mean, after all, Biden's the guy who has power right now. So, you know, I found that to be a little bit of pandering to the current sentiment of kind of angry populism rather than the more statesmanlike analysis that we like to hear from presidents and that we usually have heard from Joe Biden as president.
You know, it sounds like Washington's farewell letter really rings true today, as you were just talking about it. My question to you is, when it comes to these warnings, is there an audience who will actually heed those warnings?
Well, sure. I mean, look, these warnings are kind of meant in a general way. They're not meant necessarily, you know, the audience that's listening, the voters, has just conducted its election, so there's not much they can do until sort of the next time around, as it were. But it's a way of saying, you know, here's where society has been in my 4 years, here's where it's going, here are the things that I'm worried about. You know, the language of warning puts a slightly more ominous cast on it than I think is perhaps necessary.
Biden fashioned himself as a champion of the common man throughout his time in office. As he attempted to portray himself as the most pro-labor president ever, Biden often found himself interacting with union workers and looking to protect their rights. And he did do this in a few ways. He expanded overtime protections for more than 1 million workers, and he built new workforce pathways to make things easier. With these actions, Biden was focused on shoring up the middle class. But now that we're looking into his legacy, there's a question hanging. Was Biden successful in transforming labor into a more powerful force during his time in office? To offer his thoughts on the matter, Bloomberg's Ben Steverman joined Odyssey.
President Biden warned of an oligarchy of extreme wealth, power, and influence that is threatening democracy in the U.S. But it turns out the top 0.1% of the wealthy did very well indeed during Joe Biden's 4 years in office. Ben, you've been crunching the numbers. What can you tell us?
What we've seen is sort of the continuation of a trend that's been going on for several years, but it's that the wealth gains keep getting going to skewing to a smaller and smaller slice at the very top of the wealth spectrum. So if you look at the richest 0.1% of Americans, they got about $6 trillion richer over the last 4 years. And then if you look at just 100 people, the 100 richest people, they got about $1.5 trillion richer. And those, their percentage gains, up 60% in 4 years. It's much faster than most other Americans rose their wealth over the last 4 years.
Well, let's look at both ends of the spectrum. Is that old adage true? The rich get richer and the poor get poorer?
Not quite. So the statistics are interesting. The bottom 50%, the half of Americans, you could say kind of the working class, people who don't have much wealth, they've actually did pretty well on a percentage basis. The thing is, they were starting from such a low basis that, you know, the value of homes goes up, your value even if a car goes up. It makes a difference in terms of your quote-unquote net worth. And what really matters for those folks is their incomes, and their incomes are basically held steady. I mean, they actually, wages went up, but inflation went up too. Middle-class Americans, same thing. Homes went up, did pretty well. The the thing is that a lot of the bottom 90% are really locked out of the stock market, and especially those tech stocks that have been doing really well and that have been really benefiting the super ultra wealthy, just a handful of people, really.
Is the wealth gap getting wider?
Just depends on how you measure that. But I think the answer is yes, especially if we're looking at that very tip top of the income and wealth and spectrum, the one that President Biden is talking about. We track at Bloomberg the wealth of billionaires, and just if you look at the top 10 billionaires, their wealth is up 80% over the last four years. That's just extraordinary, and again, it's a continuation of a longer trend. But you have people like Elon Musk, now worth more than $400 billion. No one has ever been that rich ever before.
I wonder, how does all this compare to Donald Trump's 4 years in office before Joe Biden?
It's really a continuation of the same trend. Some of the numbers look better for middle class and working class folks under Biden, but then you have to look at inflation, and inflation took a lot of those gains away. If you look at the top, it's interesting. Under Trump, a lot of wealthy people did better. They benefited from a tax cut, for example. Under Biden, it's been more narrow. So the regular rich, the merely rich people, millionaires, they actually didn't do that great. They did okay. They held their own, but they didn't do great over the last 4 years. It's really, again, those gains going to the billionaires and the Elon Musks of this world.
We're thinking, what do Americans really think about Biden as he exits from office? Ron Fauché is a political analyst and the publisher of Lunchtime Politics. He recently wrote an opinion piece on how Americans are viewing Biden following his 4 years in office, and Odyssey talked to him about it.
You recently authored an opinion piece about how Americans see Joe Biden after 4 years. Very interesting as it relates to his numbers. Tell us about it.
Well, his job rating as he's leaving office now, as well as his personal rating, each are about 39% on the positive side, and in the high 50s on the negative side. And that's not a good rating, certainly, when you have a majority of the American people who both dislike you and disapprove of the job you've done. Now, having said that, we've had other presidents who've left with lower ratings. For example, George Bush left with 34% approval. Jimmy Carter left with 34% approval, and Donald Trump left with 34% approval. So you know, having those numbers like Biden has is nothing unusual. You know, we've seen that before, and we've seen a little worse in his position before. Other presidents, for instance, Ronald Reagan had a 63% approval rating when he left office. Bill Clinton actually had the highest at 66%, and Barack Obama's rating was pretty good. He was rated in the high 50s when he left. When you look at it all, Biden is on the low end of recent presidents. And he's got a majority of the American people who aren't happy with him. And on major issues, it's even worse. His ratings tend to be in the low to mid-30s.
Specifically, 31% on inflation and prices. Surprisingly, 33% on abortion, 34% on taxes and government, 35% on crime, 38% on jobs and the economy, and 39% on climate change. Some of the hallmark cornerstones of his platform that he ran on, he ends up doing miserably by the end of his tenure as president, which is kind of surprising because he actually delivered to those respective constituencies over and over again.
It is surprising, but he didn't deliver as much as they wanted him to deliver. And that's the problem, because when you're a Democratic president, you have a low rating on abortion, a low rating on climate change. That's an indication that, you know, the vast majority of Republicans don't think you did a good job on that issue. A large segment of independents don't think you did a good job on that issue. And even some Democrats don't, because they think you should have gone further and done more.
We know the presidential election and all the fanfare that comes with it is over. But no matter where you fall on the political spectrum, this is a time to stay engaged. Why, you might ask? Because whether or not you embrace newly elected President Donald Trump's platform of mass deportations, tariffs, and fewer business controls, he's moving fast. Trump has promised a blitz in his first 100 days, and he's looking to take advantage of having Republican majorities in both the Senate and the House of Representatives, as well as a conservative majority in the U.S. Supreme Court. On day one alone, he sought to roll back some of President Biden's most significant domestic policies, primarily on climate and immigration. He also froze federal hiring, granted top security clearance to members of his staff without the traditional vetting process, ordered all workers back to the office full-time, barred asylum, sought to end birthright citizenship, declared migrant crossings a national emergency, and terminated diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Trump's been in office for less than a week, but he's been busy, so we've got a few more things to add. He withdrew the U.S. from the Paris Agreement, an international treaty meant to fight climate change. He also declared a national energy emergency to suspend some environmental rules and unlock new abilities to drill. And yes, all of that stuff was just on day one. It's about as much as we have time to mention here, but we could keep adding to this list if we wanted to. Even experts would tell you that where these rollbacks of Biden's legacy projects will end up is still unknown. As the New York Times reported, some of Trump's orders are almost certain to be challenged in court, and others will be largely symbolic. Stay tuned to Odyssey and to the On Deadline podcast as we help you navigate this new era in America. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.